Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. Thank you for joining us. My name is Nick Campbell, and the special guest today, always special guest, Chris Schmidt from Grayscale Gorilla. Say hi.
Hello, hello.
We have Chad Ashley over there in Chicago as well. Say hi, Chad.
Hey, guys.
And Chad's got a special guest with him today. Can you
very
introduce...
special guest.
Yeah, an actual special guest.
He's actually here.
Can you introduce our audience to who's over on your side of the screen?
Yeah,
today?
This is my pal Trevor from caremotiondesign.com, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Trevor is in town kind of just checking out the different studios, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I figured he was coming over for lunch and seeing how our podcast kind of gets started later. Seems
later
like every week.
And later.
Originally I was like, oh, you'll probably get here right when we wrap. And then it just so happened that he was getting here as we started. So now you're our special guest.
Woo!
So you should be, you're actually our very first in-person special guest.
You know,
so you should feel good about that.
First
guest
the way. At all. Trendsetter.
Yeah. So just a little bit of a story on Trevor here. Trevor and I met at NAB, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it NAB?
I think so.
NAB last year. Mm-hmm. And we kind of both nerded out over Star Wars and Arnold and rendering and all that stuff. And then, Trevor and I basically shared, Google Hangouts information. And he's one of the people that I talk to probably every day now. He's like one of, you have that circle of people that you talk to every day. Via Hangouts or iChat or whatever. And so you're one of those people. So you should feel pretty privileged about that.
Maybe you should feel privileged.
I like your style. See, that's why you're one of my top people.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and what were you doing at NAB when we met?
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm not sure how in depth you want me to get, but
get the Cliff Notes.
All right, Cliff Notes version. I've been freelance for 2 years, I think now, since December 2014. I'd been using Cinema 4D for 4 years now. 5 years. I think 5 years now. Yeah. 4 years. 4 or 5 years. The whole way I got into NAB was, I'd been going a bunch of the previous NABs and...
Like going as a spectator.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I should have clarified that.
No, that's okay.
And basically, I just spoke with Matthias, and he reached out and said, hey, man, we like your work. Come out to NAB and talk about it. So,
great.
Since then, I've just been freelancing for, DJs, music artists, other studios. I'm really trying to kind of push more in the film direction now with my career. But, it's been a fun ride so far.
So Trevor was actually, you guys remember at, was it at NAB that you were doing the Star Wars thing, or was that SIGGRAPH?
No, I did Star Wars at SIGGRAPH.
Okay, so NAB, I don't remember what you were showing at NAB, but at SIGGRAPH, where you probably know this guy from, is he's the guy that, like, basically did that giant Star Wars short by himself, like, crazily. with like a ridiculous amount of geo and stuff, and he talked about it at SIGGRAPH and a lot of different Arnold discussions, and talked at the Autodesk Arnold event, right? At the where they
I spoke at the Vision Series for Autodesk,
right? And that was you up there with Marcos, the guy that invented Arnold, talking to a bunch of Autodesk people about how it's integrated into Cinema 4D.
Yeah. There were actually quite a number of C4D artists at the Autodesk event. At the beginning, I asked, like, who all was there that knew Cinema 4D, and like half the audience raised their hands, and I was like, woo.
That's cool.
Represent.
That's actually really pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've come in at an interesting time in the podcast where we're talking a lot about renderers and hardware, too. I guess I have a couple questions for you.
I'm here.
A couple episodes ago, we got a lot into what hardware everyone's running and this whole transition to Windows a lot of people are talking about. So what's your gear? What's your setup? What are you running these days?
Yeah, so it's sort of a ongoing conversation. But basically, I started off with, the what was it, the Mac probe right before it went into the tube.
The cheese grater. That's how I refer to it.
Sure, the cheese grater. Silver. So I started off with that when I you know, went on my own. That was my first purchase. And I, at the time, was only familiar with, you know, C40's render engine. And so I heard, you know, a lot of talk about different render engines. And at the time, I decided that I wanted to try Octane out. And at that point, you know, you can hook up some graphics cards to those machines. But I really wanted to, you know, build something out so that I could, I mean, just similar to what you have down here, you know, make the full commitment to going GPU rendering and seeing what that was all about. Anyway, so my first iteration was a PC, because, you know, you just have a lot more control over what you're doing with your box, right, overall. And, you know, as your flavors and tastes and the tools you need to use change, you know, you can kind of on the fly work on that and, you know, be constantly iterating. Anyway, it's basically I run Windows 7, and I have two Xeon 2687s. Those are the 10 cores. 10 cores each.
So when you dual thread those, mm-hmm, or hyper thread those are 20 buckets, basically.
Yeah. Yes.
Or no, sorry, more than that. 40.
40, yeah.
Oh, my mm-hmm gosh.
Yeah.
Bucket so, love.
Some serious buckets.
40 for CPU. That was later. That actually happened later, though. So my very first rig was just a 2687 Xeon, a singular, with three 980s. I don't think they were TI. I think they were just 980s.
So three GeForce 980 NVIDIA yep cards. Okay.
But now I have two Titans and a Quadro K6000. I had purchased the K6000 actually only because at the time I was rendering a really big job and needed more RAM than my 980s had, VRAM. Mm,
yeah.
And at the time, the only card with 12 gig of VRAM was the K6000.
That's weird.
And so then, like,
that's a Kepler card, right?
Yeah, it is. And actually, at the time in Octane, Kepler was running more efficiently than Pascal was, which eventually changed. But anyway, so my current build is the two Titans, a K6000, and the two Xeons.
And you built this yourself?
I built it myself, and it's all like water cooled and everything.
Okay.
And the transition for you, you know, give me a hug here a little bit.
How's it going to go? I mean, I listened to that podcast actually, and wanted to ask questions to the screen and just interact, but so now I get to.
Here he is.
So anyway, for me it was, you know, the first few days are just kind of, I don't want to say rough, it's just different. It's just, you know, you got a couple different keys, you got a, like, muscle memory, and, you know, to me, that was probably that and networking, I think, you know.
Right, yeah, that's quite a bit different.
I have a couple nodes also, so networking was a pretty big thing. A major thing I've noticed, and I don't know if this is getting, like, too techy or not, but setting up things like environment variables, which a lot of, you know, licensed servers will call, things like that, is really super easy to do in Windows. And it's not actually even possible in OS X anymore.
Hmm. So, really?
Yes.
Wow. There you go. There's something I didn't even...
I mean, the overall transition was not so bad because I had shaped, you know, kind of what my expectations were going to be going in. I know it's not going to, you know, it's not everything is going to be nicely anti-aliased and things like that.
Yeah, you have to get
you know
that.
Like if you, it's kind of like, here's a good example.
Especially in Windows 7. Windows 7 looks like crap compared to Windows 10.
It does. But I think the best analogy that you can come up with for it is the same way that I treat non-meat products, like you know, like Boca burgers and stuff like that,
okay,
that are like vegetarian food. So if you go into it knowing that it's not going to taste like meat, it can actually taste pretty good.
Okay. So
if you go into it knowing it's not going to be OS X, it's actually really
lowering my expectations.
Yeah,
got it.
Well, it's not lowering, it's just changing.
If you alter changing you alter the downwards. Expectations, I think mm-hmm. is a good term.
Yeah.
Because it's never gonna look or feel or
right.
be
right.
OS X.
That's correct.
And as for me, who I barely use OS X. I think mm-hmm. In the other podcasts I mentioned, I have we have a Mac Mini downstairs. I didn't never hardly use it. And then a long time ago I used a Mac. But I mean, I will say that once you get over some of these humps, and for me, I think for you, the biggest hump will probably be ease of use and the look and feel. It's different. And mm-hmm. I would say that it's much easier to go to Windows 10 than it is to go to Windows 7 from a Mac.
Okay.
Because it's way cleaner. It's a lot more minimal, mm-hmm. more like what you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris, you've been going through this process. Do you have any updates for Mac to Windows world?
I don't think I can really add anything terribly useful because I haven't started doing any work off that laptop. I pretty much just use it for these streams and playing video games. So, and for that, it's been great.
What game are you playing? I think people might want to know.
Lots of Overwatch and lots of Minecraft.
Hey,
Overwatch. Minecraft is dangerous, and Overwatch is super fun.
Oh, gosh, I have so many Minecraft questions.
Minecraft is so much fun. It just sucks up way too much of my time.
uh-huh. Well, I totally forgot about the first part of the podcast, which is usually news.
Oh, yeah.
But we got straight into talking with Trevor, which I don't regret at all. But I did want to catch people up because there is a lot going on the website over the next month. It looks pretty big. I wanted to do something we almost never do, which is pre-announce a sale. And we're having two sales in the next about week or so. Let's see, over the next 2 weeks. And I wanted everyone to know about it. We do this because we want people to basically get ready for the sale. We don't want to spring it on you. We used to kind of say, like, everything's on sale today only. And then people would write back and go, but I need to ask my boss and get my credit card ready and save my pennies and all that stuff. And so we're trying to do it right for you guys this time and announce two sales over the next couple weeks that I want you guys to get ready for. If you're interested in getting X particles, adding X particles to your workflow, which, by the way, I have some Arnold X particles questions.
Yeah, man.
That I'm going to ask you.
Let's talk.
I recently found out that X Particles works like seamlessly with Arnold, so much so that it doesn't even have to render the geometry inside of the viewport. It just does it automatically in Arnold. And it's kind of hard to describe that right now, but basically you get millions of particles instantly rendering with all the sexy Arnold shaders. So, look for a tutorial about that soon because I've been having a ball with that. But if you guys are looking at X Particles with or without Arnold, we're going to have $100 off X Particle sale in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned. I'm going to have a more solid date for you guys very soon, but start saving for that if you guys are interested. And we're also going to throw some extra bonuses in there as well. So keep an eye out for that. And then our big announcement is 40% off everything Grayscale Gorilla. And that is within the next couple weeks as well. So we're going to tie down those dates. Dude, thank you. 40% off. Now's the time, folks. If you have been looking at one of our products, especially something new like Top Coat or our HDRI studio rig that a ton of people have been using recently in their workflow. And I wanted to also say that it also includes our training as well. So if you've looked at our training site, saw something there you were looking at, might have got, we're going to have it all on sale for one day only. And that's going to be both of them are going to be after Thanksgiving. But before Christmas, we'll give you those dates.
That's a good range.
That's a good range.
That's a safe range.
Yeah, it's safe. We're going to, like I said, we're going to lock those down and announce it a little bit more publicly. But for those of you listening to the podcast, I wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up because we know a lot of you guys at the end of the year are, saving up some money for some of these big sales coming up. And I wanted you to save a couple extra bucks for Grayscale Gorilla stuff and X Particles if you've been looking at our products, training, or X Particles. So that's the main announcements. We have some tutorials coming up this week on the site. Chris has another Ask GSG this Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Time on our Twitch channel.
Mm-hmm.
which is C40 Live. You can go check that out there. We will be, everything will be open as far as the store and everything, but we'll be out on a Thanksgiving holiday toward the end of this week, and then planning for the sales as soon as we get back. So that was all the Grayscale Gorilla announcements, other than a very extra special guest here on the Grayscale Gorilla podcast, which I'm going to ask you a question right now, Trevor.
Yeah, go for it, man.
So I know I can render. So what's really cool about the Arnold X-Particles thing is you could go into the Arnold tag. You basically add that Arnold tag to your X-Particles emitters. So the first question is what else can I add that Arnold tag to? I found that emitters work, and I found that trails work.
Okay.
Anything else I should be experimenting with? Because I got some daily renders to
the
Arnold
parameters tag, you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so the Arnold parameters tag can go on any scene object in Cinema 4D. And basically what it does is it exposes the controls that are being translated into Arnold. So like it's basically exposing the nodes in like Arnold standalone to you in Cinema 4D. So for example, if you like have a camera, you can put Arnold parameters tag on it and it'll expose all the camera options available in Arnold. So it's literally like one tag fits all objects.
Okay. That was really amazing because you could put that tag on anything. But what's almost confusing in a way is it's different for every object. But now that you described it that way, it makes sense. So you could put it on an emitter, and then you could choose things like spheres and triangles and stuff. You could put it on a tracer, and it seems to just show up, and it'll give you thickness options and all that cool stuff as well.
So what that's doing is rendering what are called Arnold curves. That'll work with any splines in Cinema 4D.
Wow.
And so you can, you know, use a standard shader on that, or you can use a hair shader on that as well, actually. And that's all being loaded, generated at render time. So instead of having to, like, sweep all of your objects, you know, you can just throw that tag on it and it'll build that object out perfectly smooth at render time. And, you know, you can have your viewport playing back just your really lightweight splines, like, in real time.
Yeah, that was the amazing part, was watching all the real time feedback in the viewport with no geometry in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then hitting render and seeing the geo pop up. So that's a cool way of working. Anything else I can experiment with that tag and X particles in particular?
Absolutely. With X particles and shaders, so you can, in the tag, when you put it on an X particle emitter, it gives you options. I think it's the export tab. I think there's an export tab.
Yeah.
And it will allow you to export all of the variables that X particles carries. So like ID, speed,
velocity.
Age, things like that. You can export into Arnold, essentially, which basically just means you can put a shader on it and pull any one of those features into anything that you can plug into in the Arnold shader network, which is everything.
Right.
So like subsurface, diffuse, spec, you know, you can ID everything. So let's say you wanted to have, I don't know, like a bunch of, let's say you put, I don't know, lemons on the X particle, right? Like, so you use Arnold, the Arnold parameters tag to load in, like you were saying, in that custom shape.
So you'd have like a particle system of lemons.
Right, a particle system of lemons.
And you want to change the hue.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with
this. I know where you're going, but I want to hear it.
Okay, so if you want to, you know, let's say shade all your lemons very slightly differently, you know, you can take those IDs, pull that ID in just with one node called the X particles node, and pipe that into like a hue, for example, or a saturations, and get, you know, basically varying those variables for every single instance just for free. So, you know, you get like all kinds of variation. You can do crazy colors. You can, you know, pipe that information into a ramp, which can be driving image shaders. It can be driving just color. It can drive like anything.
The exposure that they've kind of built in is pretty robust. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It's and a lot of people, you know, are talking about, and I know probably a lot of our listeners right now are probably like, well, cycles, you know, that's the the newest thing that integrates with X Particles. What do you think? Have you tried that? Have you played with it?
I honestly have. I've been crazy busy lately, so I haven't. I mean, I watched a little bit of Casey's stream.
Oh, the live stream.
The other day. What's that?
The live stream?
Yes. Just a little bit while I was actually working on another project. You know, people seem to be excited about its integration. I would expect it's at least what Arnold is able to do, but I don't.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of curious about. Like, is there any integration that they have that is not in Arnold?
Available in Arnold? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting. Maybe we'll find out when we're going to get a couple Casey. Copies at GSG. And
we'll have to get Casey Hupke on the stream then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so speaking of like. You know, Arnold and, mm-hmm. and all the things that, you know, about the integration with X Particles, mm-hmm. how much of what you do on a daily basis is kind of those two tools working together? Like, do you do a lot of that?
Well, so lately I've been doing a lot of personal environment projects, and using X Particles, you can generate like trillions of polygons for almost free in Arnold. Like actually on my, if you go to my website, kerrmotiondesign.com/talks mm-hmm. Are my SIGGRAPH presentations, and it actually goes like right. further into depth about that. But basically what I've been doing is using X Particles to like scatter foliage, you know, trees, grass, all these kind of other things based on things like vertex maps or textures. Mm-hmm. You know, you can use Cinema 4D textures yep. to tell X Particles where to go on geometry. So if I like have a mountain and then paint on it, like, where I want the trees to go.
With vertex map?
With vertex map or a shader.
Okay.
Then, you know, it'll only scatter where those maps are. Mm-hmm. And then you load in trees, which can be, you know, as high density as you want them to be. Usually, for me, they've been about 3 to 4 million polygons. So that means,
per
like...
Per tree.
Per tree. And then that's loaded in at render time. And then I can use X Particle IDs to, you know, shift the colors of the trees slightly. Mm-hmm. For every tree, and it only costs me the memory of one tree.
Is there any other particle system that you guys can think of that, I mean, is X Particles is kind of the system, right?
Yes. I mean, to me it is. There's, you know, you have Espresso and you have the standard
thinking particles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys ever use that, or do you always just do X Particles?
Chris, remember the video we made with the thinking particles?
Yeah, we were trying to do a live stream video of thinking particles to do this basic thing. Because I know, or at least knew, thinking particles really well. And it was getting like so obtuse, and we were connecting so many things to try and make the most basic things happen. And then that was one where we gave up. It was like, this isn't working. We got to stop. It's not working. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it was just like an emitter too. You're like, well, we got to get this emitting somehow. And it took like four different nodes.
Yeah.
And then we both gave up and switched to X Particles. We're like, okay, emitter, how does this work? Click emitter.
And we didn't know X Particles at the time.
Right. We're like learning it as we go, and it just all... We're like, what now? I don't know. I think we added turbulence. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It just worked.
Oh, well, turbulence.
Yeah.
You just added trail.
Pretty well, integrated.
I think, you know, TP is like... I come from 3ds Max, mm-hmm. and like thinking particles in 3ds Max is made by Cebus, and it's like a whole VFX. It's built... A lot of VFX pipelines are built on that tool in Max. But is that not the same thinking particles that's in
Cinema? No. It is. Well, here's the thing. I think back in Cinema 4D version 8, if I'm recalling correctly, Maxon bought like the code to thinking particles as it existed at that time. It wasn't integration. They bought the code. And then based on them owning that code, they also developed Espresso. But as thinking particles went and continued evolving – the Maxon and thus Cinema 4D version of it didn't evolve along with it. So we just have the version from like 2003, maybe 2002.
So they just literally snapshotted.
Yeah, it's a snapshot
time
of thinking
in
particles.
That product's development
from 2002. Said,
this is what you're going to get forever.
And that's it. And that's what we got.
Well, but so that means, though, Chris, when you were learning back then, that it was kind of like a pretty robust system, right?
Oh, it was amazing. It was the first time you could like it was the first time particles could like interact with geometry in any kind of way, because before that you just had the old particle system and you could just make a flat like polygon deflector, and that's all you had. So if you wanted to bounce off a sphere, you had to make like And there's no cloners, keep in mind. You had to make like a series of arrays around the sphere to make particles bounce off of a sphere. And then there's thingy particles. It's like, oh, just connect the emitter to the particle node, output the particle node to a deflector, and now tell the geometry, and it would just work. But
I would love to see X particles do like a node tree based workflow.
Yes, I feel like that'd be incredible.
Because I really X particles is so intuitive and like pretty easy to pick up and like make a pretty basic system. But what it's really lacking, I think, is that next level of control. Mm-hmm. What have you run into?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree on that actually. It's nice having the hierarchy, and that's, you know, really intuitive, especially for like when you're just starting out with it and you don't really kind of know what's going on. I mean, like, you know, Nick and Chris said they just walked in and had no idea what they were doing and immediately started working in it. But I think to get to be able to see it in a node network would be really strong, because then, you know, you can see the interconnecting relationships.
Yeah.
And also, you know, assign things a lot more intelligently.
Right, yeah.
Well, I think that's the question-answer system right now is a little obtuse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the testing that I really think it needs it for, like you said, because one thing's coming from Max and PFlow and even XSI and ICE, it's like it's got a really robust testing thing where you can say, you know, if particle enters this volume, then execute this. And like that type of control is like, you need that on jobs. Like I can't, it's really hard to not have that. I think
you can kind of do that now. But you know, being able to see the flow of the line going, you know, asking the question and giving you the two answers is a lot more straightforward to look at in a linear fashion than it is to like kind of look through a hierarchy. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if you're handing the scene off to somebody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You do a system and you like send it off to the next artist, or maybe you pick it up even 2 years later and you can't remember what the hell you did.
Yep.
And like that's really what it comes
Or even a couple weeks later.
Yeah, right.
But, you guys are making me want to go play with X particles.
Okay. I feel like you know, that's something, that's one of my goals like for 2017 is to really like dive in more to X particles and really learn it better, because I feel like it's such a powerful tool that I've only scratched the surface on.
Yeah, it's definitely super powerful. And a lot of the C4D shaders work with it. Well, can work with it too, which is really cool. Yeah. Like by that I mean for, you know, emission, for like if you want to just scatter. Yeah. So there's actually Mario turned me on to using the terrain shader. Are you guys familiar with the terrain shader?
Terrain shader, that's one of the oldest things.
Yeah, so the terrain shader, you know, you can evaluate slope.
Oh, right, yeah. So you can do that.
You can, but you have to bake it.
Oh, well,
so there's that caveat.
That's lame.
But you know, it works.
Yeah. So does painting a map, though, at that
point.
That's
true, at that point.
But it's intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I got to go figure out. You know what? I could ask if I want the high quality density lemon in Arnold style rendered, what node do I hook that up to? Do I just make that an emitter, or do I hook that into the emitter geometry, or is it a separate way of working?
So you take your emitter.
Yep.
You place the Arnold parameters tag on it.
Got it.
You spin down the drop down for shape, I think it is, and you select custom shape. Oh, you could probably pull it up.
Oh, I'm an idiot. I got so excited with Sphere, I didn't go any further.
Yeah. So, and then all you're gonna do is a dialog opens up where you can drag an object in.
Yep.
And then it's gonna load. And the interesting thing is, you know, you have you still can. It's not really radius, but you know, like the scale, you can still at the Arnold level, tell Arnold to read it at a greater or smaller scale without having to go reload, your, you know, setting it on the particle level, reload it, and then, see your result. You can actually just scale it straight in Arnold, like in real time. Like
can you also do it via X particles radius?
Then yes, you can do it. But then you have to, you know, re-emit the particle.
Oh, interesting. Oh. So it's not, you have to like basically refresh it.
Yeah. X particles needs the refresh. The Arnold tag is live.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So that's actually a smarter way to do it. Only difference is Now, here's a question. Mm-hmm. If I'm in X particles and I'm emitting, you know, lemons, and I change the size, but I have a variation in my size of lemons, because not every lemon is the same size.
Right.
So I have that built up in my X particle system, and then I want to change the global size using the Arnold shape. Is it still going to respect the variation that I've put into it?
Yeah, it's just a multiplier for whatever the particle
whatever
scale
it reads
is.
It as, the particle scale will then be multiplied.
Okay. Correct. Cool. And another thing you can do, actually, is once if you start using really dense objects, like, you know, a couple million polygons each, if you have, like, you know, let's say 5 models, and they're all, you know, 5 million polygons each, when you press save, it's going to take you, you know, like 30 or 40 seconds to save that project, and it's going to be like a gig or gig and a half. Right, in file size. Mm-hmm. What you can do is you can save each of those out to an Arnold scene source file.
Okay.
And then load that. Okay. So take what
break
we just
it down.
Talked,
yeah. Simple.
Take what we just talked about. Yep. But instead of dragging the object in, you're going to drag in an object that's loading a file.
Oh, so, the ASS file.
Yeah, the ASS file.
You can say
oh,
it. That's
there
fine.
You go. The ASS file.
Talking about the ASS file.
So essentially,
he didn't want to say it.
I wasn't sure what the rating.
Hey, we didn't name it.
I mean, keep it PG-13.
Okay. So anyway, I forgot where I was.
So you're talking about being able to essentially have a giant scene file by using the.
They sound
file.
Like XRefs.
Yeah. It is, but it's done with a basically a text document. The ASS file is literally a text document that you can open up and read and like change things in if you wanted to. Yeah. So
get crazy.
It's if you want to. I'm not like a super code guy or anything, but like I've gone in and changed the variables in there before instead of like re-exporting another file, stuff like that. Okay. Like you can do a quick Control F find. I don't know, like roughness, and then you see the value, and you just change it in
that
file.
Cool. That reminds me long, long time ago. That's how I don't remember if it was Maya or something. Everything had this SDL, this scene description. I think maybe language was the L, but yeah, you could do that. Like you could essentially like open up a text document and change settings, and it was like magic.
So it's all being contained outside of your C4D file, which means your file is going to be fast. Your viewport's going to be fast. If you want to see what you're looking at instead of, you know, when you pull an ASS file in.
that's never going to get old.
No. And I was just using kick the other day. So I'm typing out kick.
Ass.
So I was using the Cornell bunny. So it was like kick Cornell ass. And it's, I don't know, dot ass. So
it's just a lot of giggling going on.
Yeah, there was. Just like in the privacy of my home. anyway, so they're all staying outside your C4D scene, and they come in basically like a bounding box. That's how it defaults when it comes in. So your lemon would look like a cube. And then if you wanted to see the lemon, you can actually, you know, flip through its display type. You can look at it as a point cloud.
Oh my God, yeah.
Or you can look at it actually as the full geometry.
And that shows
whatever.
Up in the IPR too. Like you don't need to like really.
Oh yeah. You don't have to do that. Like you know, the viewport, you don't want to bog down too much. So I always keep that as bounding boxes and then, you know, just adjust things in the IPR. Because
that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Cause you can, I mean, I have actually in that SIGGRAPH presentation, I have on Paul Babb's laptop I was using for the presentation.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. It's a funny story.
You know, I had 1.2 trillion polygons, and I was just like flying around the scene live on the screen.
Can I tell that story?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so this is a funny. You guys want to hear the story about that?
Yeah,
how that came to be? Now tell me, just stop me if I get it wrong, but like the idea was that, you know, Trevor was going to show up at the Autodesk booth at SIGGRAPH to demonstrate all the crazy polygon counts he's been getting with Arnold and with Cinema 4D. And so he was constantly trying to get a hold of the Autodesk people to find out like, what kind of machine am I going to be on? Is it going to be able to, you know, load these files? Is everything? And they're kind of giving him the bit of the brush off. And then he shows up there, and you know, you think Autodesk, you think gigantic corporation with Maya, Max, and Media and Entertainment Group, all the stuff, and you think they're going to have like a really robust machine for him to do his demo on. But it turns out, what did they have? They had like a
it was
a terrible machine.
Yeah, it was like one of the older HP. One of those HP boxes. I don't remember.
Yeah, they had some really, really horrible HP machine.
No SD drives and stuff like
that. Yeah, not even. I don't mean to. How do you not have a solid state drive on a demo machine when you're Autodesk? That blows my mind. Anyway, so I remember you're asking around, like, mm-hmm. does anybody have a laptop that I could take to. Because I don't know what they're going to have.
Yep.
And this is, I mean, we're just going to talk about how awesome Paul Babb is, mm-hmm. as if you don't already know. Maxon USA, Paul Babb, CEO, he's like, use mine. And, you know, how weird is that? Like, think about that for a second. Paul Babb, CEO of Maxon USA, giving his laptop to a guy that's going to go demo with it at an Autodesk show in front of all Autodesk people. Like, that's just crazy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it worked flawlessly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was. I mean, it wasn't. And what kind of a laptop was it? Just for those who care.
I think it was. Oh, geez. I think it was one of those Predator. They had bought it last
year. Was it an Asus?
Yeah.
It was an Asus.
It was like mid level gaming laptop, basically.
Okay. I think I remember that one actually.
I think they said they had gotten them last year. So 2015. Yeah.
So anyway, Paul Babb, I mean, that's pretty dope.
Yeah. And that's not to say, like, I mean, the Autodesk people were really nice and they were great.
Oh, yeah. I'm not trying to.
No, I know. I get it.
I see what you're doing.
You know,
there,
it is a.
I'm just
it
saying.
It is a big, you know, corporate structure. And
right.
Paul Babb's an awesome dude.
He really is.
So that's,
I think that's really what
I
it
think
all
you
comes
summed
down
it up
to.
Right there.
Yeah,
and that was pretty key right there. He's a he's a guy mm-hmm. that will be glad to help you out.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I think as we wrap up here, we get on about an hour. I thought we could do something we do on some episodes, which is just kind of talk about something that we're into, something we discovered over the last couple weeks that may be cinema related, maybe 3D, maybe art, maybe music, anything. Anything anyone's into that you think maybe our audience might dig. And maybe we'll try something else new. And Trevor, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, okay.
We're going to ask our audience a question. We get a lot of people that watch this on YouTube and also on iTunes. And which, by the way, as I mentioned that, all if right. you want to see today's show notes, which we have all the links to all this stuff, including Paul Babb for president. We'll put that one in there. please head on over to iTunes and also on YouTube. We put all these show notes out there, including everything we're about to talk about. And please subscribe if you're listening to us on iTunes or through Overcast or some podcast app. We'd love to get you as a subscriber and also as a to get a review if you can. That would be super helpful for us. But Trevor, I'm going to have you ask our audience a question that they could respond over on YouTube. And maybe it's just some sort of data collection about something you're into. And see, kind of ping our audience and see what the heck they're doing. So I'll have you think about that.
Okay.
And think about something cool that you've been into recently. And maybe, Chris, do you have something you've been digging the last couple weeks?
I don't have anything super extra cool. I've been doing a lot of what I've been doing. So, you know, lots
of... Go back
to
the YouTube episode.
Yeah. Lots of YouTube, watching lots of YouTube, playing lots of Overwatch, playing lots of Minecraft. I've been working on putting the next Dungeons & Dragons campaign together using Microsoft OneNote, which is the most amazing app ever for putting together those kind of complex notes, interlinking things and whatnot.
Can you describe what that is? Is that like a mind map kind of situation?
No, I really like those mind node apps where you kind of like just drag a, you mm-hmm. know, kind of a tree of different things. But this is, I don't know, it's pretty much like Microsoft Word, but you can embed, well, I'm sure even Word can do that, but you can embed a whole bunch of different tables and images and links, and you can embed YouTube videos and all that. But it's really about how it kind of like organizes things, where it's like on the left you have like books, And inside your books, you can pretty much put like chapters. And you click on a chapter and it opens up into the window and you have these tabs. And every tab can get pages and every page can have subpages. And it's just, it's organized on the proper number of levels where you're, like your brain works at that number of levels where it's like, oh, here's the big category. Here's the specific section I care about. Here's the topic I'm on, and then here's the details. And then in any one of – at any point, you can just search on any other one, or you can make a link from one page to another. So you can be like, oh, like here's – for me, it's D&D. So it's like, oh, this character. So I just put his name, but then I link to his page. So while I'm working on it, I can click directly in there, see the page, jump back to the previous one. I can put like YouTube videos for like – oh, music. Like there's supposed to be applause at this point. So I can click a button that automatically plays a YouTube in the window of like applause sound, and it, you know, just little things like that where I really crazy. Love I really love what it does. I don't think I'd use it for anything other than my Dungeons and Dragons notes, but it works great for that.
Microsoft made the perfect Dungeons and Dragons
yes
notes.
And they probably have no idea that they did it.
Yep.
That's funny.
I'll share, give you guys some time. PBS released a new show called Soundbreaking. My buddy Chad, who always knows me so well, my other buddy Chad, not this Chad.
So many Chads.
You know me well too, Chad.
Two Chads.
But you didn't you didn't text me on Tuesday, last Tuesday, telling me about Soundbreaking, which is an incredible, basically music documentary, and they're breaking apart kind of different sections. And tonight's, which is Monday, is all about, it looks like hip hop, so it's about sampling and how sampling kind of changed what music could do. The second episode was all about four tracks and multi-track recording. I think the third or fourth episode was all about vocals and capturing different types of vocals, about singer-songwriters. So if you're into music, highly, highly recommend. This Soundbreaking is incredible. Every episode's been awesome. In fact, let's see, one, two, three. I think they're on episode five or six. So check it out. I'm not sure where to watch this after the fact, but if you have PBS, which many people do, on their antenna or whatever you have at home, go check it out. Let me know what you think. I've really dug it. In fact, if you're looking the first one to start off with, check the four track one out. That was Tuesday, last Tuesday.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's
also check that one out.
Amazing.
I thought we were limited to like productive topics. If we were talking about that, I would say Westworld.
Now Chris wants to go back.
No. Well, I've just been watching a lot of Westworld, which is amazing, but I won't say any more than that.
Westworld is pretty killer.
Yeah.
I hear good things as well.
I haven't seen yesterday's yet. So
yeah, I just watched it last night.
Okay. Yep.
I kind of go through this thing on Sundays where I'm either going to watch, I'm too tired to either watch, I can't watch both, but Walking Dead and Westworld are on. Mm. And I have to make a conscious decision based on my mood, which one it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you're a Walking Dead fan right now, this season is extremely depressing. Not that
hasn't that been every episode since the first season?
Yeah, but this season people are walking away from it because it's so down. Anyway, so I watched Westworld instead, and it was a good episode. But yeah.
All right, right in that.
So I guess for mine, those of you who follow me on Twitter, you know that I was trying to go all Wacom or Wacom. I guess Wacom is
Wacom.
The correct
they
way.
Say Wacom.
Wacom. I tried to go all Wacom for a week, and I made it through it one day. And I couldn't do it.
You gotta push through, man.
I couldn't do it, dude. Could not do it because here's why. I have a death grip that cannot, like, I literally am like tight fisted like this all the time. And so by the end of the day, my hand is like killing me. And I said to myself, I'm all right, this is stupid. I'm just not a Wacom guy. Like, that's, I just came to the terms, like, okay, I'm not that guy. I want to be like that, but I can't. So I'm going to be I'm a mouse guy. I'm going to embrace being a mouse guy. And I said, I'm going to buy a better mouse. And that's what I did. And I bought the, I'm going to put it up on camera here. For those of you just listening, I'm putting my new fancy mouse.
Ooh, it's
the
Razer
Death
mouse.
Adder Elite. Couldn't have a more ridiculous gamer name. Elite. And if you notice here, it's changing colors. It's basically made, it's made by Razer, and everything they do basically has to change colors, it feels like.
And comes with a Mountain
Dew. I do not
have
a problem with
that. And ships with a case of Mountain Dew, code red. And I gotta say, I'm not completely sold on the mouse, and here's why. I think it's extremely well made, and it's definitely The parts are great. It's got a really long cable, so if you're one of those guys like me, like your computer's all the way over there and your mouse is here and you don't want to use a port for a mouse, it can reach. That's a plus. The other plus is the sensitivity on the wheel. Great. Mm-hmm. Great sensitivity on the wheel. My problem is that it's really light, and I feel like I'd like a little bit more girth in my mice.
I can actually talk about this as
you
well.
You have the same
because
one.
I just got this mouse as well, like maybe a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. I came from the Naga. I really like the Naga, okay. But for me, it's the shape. Like, I'm a shape guy.
Are you a palm or a claw?
I'm a this.
Well, you're a palm. That's
okay,
palm.
I'm a palm.
I learned about that in my research.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you're a claw person, you go like this. You're like this with your mouse. If you're a palm person, you're like that.
I see.
Wait, how can you do the claw?
If you have a big hand.
Oh, I guess.
Well, hold the mouse up and do it with the claw, because I don't even understand
how
that works.
Would you like to be your surface?
So if I'm a... got to hold it this way.
Oh, yeah.
So if I'm a claw person, I'm more like this.
What? Who does that? That's my question
people
for the audience.
Very
does anyone do that?
And then, like me, I'm like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are definitely two grip styles that I learned about. And I personally could never do claw. My hands are just not that big. But, I feel like I'm not sold on it. So my question to the audience is, hit us up in the links, or sorry, in the comments, and let me know what my mouse I should try next, because I'm really not sold on this.
Or for those of you who think
go to
you
your
should
Amazon mouse,
the Amazon Basics,
Amazon Basics mouse,
$2.
I have four of those in the house.
For those of you who think Chad should try Wacom again, that's
I would literally have to get injections of muscle relaxers in my arm to do a Wacom, dude.
You know, you guys have been telling me it's going to take me a week to get used to Windows one day. You know, you got to give it.
That is
you gotta
true.
Give it the same thing.
I tell you what, this is what we'll do.
Wait, you're going to steal my question.
What? No. Okay. All I was going to say was, if you go Windows, I'll go Wacom.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I'll give it a solid try. I will.
Okay.
My arm will... I'll probably have to go to the doctor, but...
I will be there with you for different reasons.
Mental reasons.
Yeah, he'll be lying on a sofa.
Oh, they'll be... Yeah, my arms will be wrapped around.
And I'll just be in a sling, like, with my arm.
What are you in for? Wacom.
Wacom, I hardly knew him.
I got Wacom arm. Trevor, what have you been into, and what's the what question you have for our audience?
Sure. So the past I want to say like maybe week and a half, I've been learning Python.
Ooh.
I'm not a code guy at all.
Python's
don't,
fun.
Don't, yeah, you are.
I'm not really not, yeah, not really. I mean,
look at him. He's a code guy.
I'm not a code guy. This
is... Well, here's the thing though,
it's
almost every code person says they're not, because everybody knows how much more there is to know, but you probably already know like 100,000 times more than somebody who doesn't know anything.
This is
so
true.
So everyone who's a lower level than you is going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course you're a code guy. Look at what you did.
Mm-hmm. But here, the interesting thing to me is not, or I guess it doesn't interest me because it's code. I actually don't really get anything out of having to learn, you know, strings, floats, you know, all that kind of stuff, like, and syntax and all of that. Like, that's, I don't want to memorize a bunch of stuff, but the things that I can get from learning that is what excites me. For myself, I'm looking to take a lot of the human error out of things like, you know, file paths, directories.
So automation, basically.
Automation like that. You know, actually, C40 has gone a long way in, we were actually talking about this the other day, the token system.
Yep.
And take system, you can automate kind of stuff with the take system and tokens, render tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you had picked up the Dropbox idea. So this was something we were talking about the other day, was, you know, anytime you make a play blast or, you know, render to picture viewer, if you just put $PRJ, like, it's going to take the name of your project and render that as the name. You can also put date, time, blah, blah, blah. So basically, every time you press Shift R or render to picture viewer, it's going to render a different name, and you can have that just like always point to whatever folder.
Or so you want to expand on that with Python? Is that the idea?
Yeah. And beyond that, so that it's helped me learn Arnold's language as well, Kick. Mm-hmm. So, and I hear that Python's the easiest language to learn, like, in that way. So I've just been trying to open myself to that side of things. And there are actually some websites that are pretty helpful for stuff like that. They have, like, a little... it's almost like going to school, but for free. There's a, I wish I could remember the name of the website. There's, like, a whole community for it, and it, I can't remember.
Is it that... Is it Coursera, Chris? Is that...
I don't think that's it. Coursera. There are, like, 18 lessons for, like, basic Python. Oh. And they, it's really straightforward, and at the bottom of the thing, there's, like... It gives you a little test, and you got to type this, the code out, and... you know, evaluate it and stuff like that.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's like super easy. I did it in, I did most of my learning I did in an afternoon.
Wow.
Actually. So, yeah.
So what's your question?
My question, well, when you guys said question, I thought it was just a question. I didn't know it was actually related to the thing. But so my question was actually going to be related to the Windows OS X conversation. And that is, what would you miss the most leaving OS X for a different platform?
For Nick or for everybody?
Everybody.
That's okay. Everybody.
Or Nick.
That's a good question.
Nick answer it.
I like it. Would you like me to answer that? Or should we let our audience answer that?
I would like both.
Yeah. You prime them, Nick.
Goodness. Man, there's a lot of little things that I would feel frustrated about. So to me, the overall thing that I would miss is my knowledge of it, is my knowledge of being comfortable in my own world and knowing where to look for things. I think anytime you do a project and you have to go like remember where you put all the tools, and then this piece is different from here, and then you forgot to charge the battery, and then you got to go wait for that, and then you forget the drywall bit is different from the wood bit. And like those kind of physical projects where I don't do them enough always frustrate me. I just had to do some new stuff at my house. And those, it just reminds me of that kind of situation that I feel like I'm going to be in when I switch to Windows, or if I switch to Windows, which is not really the one or two things that I'm really going to miss. It's going to be really the comfortableness of knowing where everything is and knowing what drawer to open, at least to go find the headphone jack or whatever analogy I'm trying to get right now. As I open up and just open up Cinema 4D or just do this one thing, I think I'll be okay. But that one day where I want to like adjust the volume of this separately from this, or try to figure out how to network two computers together.
Yeah, the day you set up a live stream.
Yeah, like the day I try to go do a live stream.
I'm
going to
be on with him all day. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it'll be like three applications, microphones, and lighting, and...
Yeah, so it is, I know that's kind of a cop-out and kind of saying everything, but it's really not one thing for me. That I'm too worried about. I think there's always going to be some sort of analogous way of, you know, switching from ScreenFlow to Camtasia, or, you know, learning how to turn up or down a volume switch or whatever it is I get frustrated about. I'm sure there's always an answer for it. And so for me, it's overall the little thorns like that are what are going to add up to me. That's going to make me wish for my OS X blanket back.
I have a response to that. And that is, for me, you know, I feel very much that I was that way as well, when I went freelance and was like, okay, what am I going to do now with software and hardware and all that kind of stuff? And at first it did feel like that. It felt like, you know, I'm one step forward is like three steps back. But I mean, at least I feel like I'm always learning, and I've, transitioned my viewpoint from really like looking at it from a perspective of this is harder, and this is, you know, or I really missed this thing, and it turns into what is this tool doing now that I wasn't able to do before, and that actually gets me excited about learning more tools and kind of like fleshing out what I really want to use on a day-to-day basis instead of, you know, looking at what I've been comfortable with and saying and kind of just ignoring the other stuff. Because I was very much, and I'm not saying one's better than the other. I'm just saying that now having, you know, been in this environment for a little while, it is more work and it is more time investment, especially in the start. But at the end, I feel like, you know, you have a...
It's opened up more doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I mean, I could see that. I mean, I think that's really the when you get to the real issue of not knowing and that not that unfamiliarity is daunting at first. But I think that's a temporary, I think it's a temporary feeling.
It's it is temporary. And I think, you know, we have been, we've had a lot of good people and a lot of good designers and developers that have made lots of software that we're used to opening up and it works. And, you know, you don't have to ask a lot of questions. And that's actually a really cool and good thing. And I think it promotes growth in other applications and makes other applications and software and hardware, rise up to that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are people, I don't know how to get to what I'm saying. Yeah, just move on.
Sorry. Get over it. I think the,
but I feel like it's a, you know, overall, just more, you're more open to questioning the things you do and why you do them and the tools you're using and is this the best for me to be using and just kind of
it's all, I think balances. it's a lot like you know, opening yourself up to, like, an analogy that I think of is like rocks in a river, and you have to get across that river and you know, you're used to this one path, but there are a lot of different ways that you could take across that river, and it's all about being open to whichever one is going to give you the best experience and the best results. And unfortunately, manufacturers, Apple, has not really made an effort to make as many paths available on their river that other manufacturers have, and maybe that'll change. But, and
that,
you know,
that's not to say I don't use Apple products. I love Apple products, actually. I have an iPhone and I have...
Is this the backpedaling part of the...
No, I'm not backpedaling at all. I'm, like, exposing that I don't hate...
Let's mess with you.
I know.
He's saying he uses all the rocks.
Yeah. So, I mean, I use it for what I feel like I'm most efficient at it
with.
Which is, like, email and just wasting time on the internet. And, you know, like, it's when I'm done working and I want to sit down and not... input and have to figure things out, I'm gonna, you know, use my Apple laptop because it's just a really nice experience. It's like, you know, sitting down with a nice glass of scotch or something. Wow. But when I go to work, you know, I'm
Did
gonna
we just compare scotch to
sure
okay
but I mean, you know, there's a time and place for it, and that's what my time and place is.
And the PC with the neon is the Mountain Dew. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna
done.
There's a time for Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Well, and I was gonna say maybe it's more like the water when you're, you know, working in the day.
Okay.
Could be.
I don't know. This is good. I wanted to thank you guys for being my support through this. I feel really connected to you guys, that you always support me through this big transition in
through
my
this
life.
Through
this difficult
time. We'll be here for you, man.
Thank you, guys. We should wrap up, though. Thank you so much, Trevor, for stopping by today and saying hi. And if you'd like to learn more about Trevor and see his amazing reel, by the way, which I just watched again.
Oh, thank you.
And check out his Star Wars short. Check out the show notes that are over at episode 11, I think, today. And as always, thank you, Chad and Chris, for joining us in today's podcast. Look for another one next week. We got to go get all these notes together. And if the podcast is just randomly super late, it's because I've been playing in X Particles all day after learning about these all that geometry stuff. So if you see a daily render that has like a bunch of lemons in it and then the podcast is late, you know what happened. So thanks again for coming by, as always. I will see, I'm so bad at ending these. Bye. Thank you so much for coming, everyone.
Bye, everybody. Later.
Have a good week.